The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
To the Lotus Place on this Wednesday evening, October the 14th, 2015. And this is the night after the so-called Democratic candidate debate, if that's what you want to call it. I did watch just a little bit of it. I couldn't get all of it up. Took me a minute to get the live stream up, rather. However, I did see Hillary Clinton say something about her not smoking marijuana or whatever. But from my understanding, her and her husband, they did a whole lot of other things. So they know what to ask these people, because marijuana wasn't the right drug to ask her about. But anyway, I watched that debate, and a so-called debate, and it was just a big sham to me. And I'd like to know what you think. What are your thoughts in regards to the Democratic debate? And let's see, I think that other person, I can't even recall his name, didn't even know he was running for president. I did see Bernie Sanders, O'Malley, and Hillary Clinton. I think the other couple of people, I have no idea who they are, so they don't even have a snowball's chance in hell. Not that I'm voting for Hillary or Bernie Sanders, none of those people. But anyway, I'd like to hear what your thoughts are in regards to the debate, as well as the blueprint for Black success. What do we need to do? What should we focus on? Quite often, there are many discussions in regards to, like, what we should focus on as Black people. Should we focus on education? Should we focus on what's going on in Africa, countries in Africa? Should we focus on prison industrial complex? You know, my thoughts are, there's so many problems and issues that we have that we could focus on and try to solve and resolve. And I think that it's enough of us and enough problems for us to, I guess we could just go into essentially some breakout groups and just work on all of these different issues and problems. I think we have enough people that are concerned and enough people with problems to work on some of these problems. Like, I know one issue in regards to people being incarcerated is when these people have served their time, everyone should be able to come out and vote. That is their right. They're paying taxes, and these people should have an opportunity to vote just like anybody else. Because if not, then what's the point in going to prison? Prison used to be about reform. And the previous show, Scotty, I don't know if you're still out there, I did hear the tail end of it, speaking about, you spoke about the tweet and Sprint with the prison work and all that. AT&T is the same way. AT&T will have people working there for years, 10 years, while they're doing a 10-year bid, and then they get out of jail and then try to apply for the same position at AT&T, and then AT&T won't hire them because they're a former former prisoner. That's crazy as hell to me. If you've been working for AT&T 10 years while incarcerated, then AT&T should have a position waiting on you when you come out. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to know what other people think. In regards to that, I remember hearing Angela Davis speak on this issue. And, I mean, I was just appalled and astounded to find out how many companies have people, have prisoners working and slaving for nickels and dimes. And then when they are released, they can't even work for that same company. It's crazy. It's insidious. And I think that something definitely should be done about that. I believe Victoria's Secret, the lingerie store for ladies, I believe Victoria's Secret also has workers in the prison. I'm not sure if they take the orders or if they're actually making the underwear, like what was seen on demonstrated on that Netflix film Orange is the New Black. But Victoria's Secret also uses prison workers for their company. There's so many. I think it was at one time Pizza Hut, I believe, had some prison workers being the operators, like taking the calls for the pizza. So I definitely would say that's an issue there. I don't want to see my brothers and sisters being incarcerated and working for peonage and then come out and still can't get a job. And see, that just, to me, that's crazy, because if you serve your time, and please everyone in the audience, forgive the noise, but that's just crazy to me, because I think that people should be able to, after they serve their time, be able to come out. If you need food stamps, if you need food aid, if you need housing aid, you should be able to have that, because how in the world can you come out from being incarcerated and then immediately be expected to just jump up and get on your feet when some of these people have been incarcerated all of their lives? I just can imagine being incarcerated for, say, 25 years, 30 years. Say if I went in when I was about 14, 15, or 18 years old, and then you come out. I mean, what are you supposed to do? I see why so many former prisoners commit suicide or commit a crime just so they can go back, because it's difficult to, I'm sure it's difficult to adjust. It's difficult for me as a regular person out here on my own just trying to adjust to life in and of itself. So, Scotty, if you're there, could you please see if we have a call from 718 area code and open up their mic for me? You may have a caller from 718 and also 228. You may have some calls from those area codes, because I'm getting some messages that they're trying to get through. So tonight we are talking about the blueprint for success, and we want to hear your thoughts on the blueprint for Black success. What can we do? What should we do? What steps should we take? What are some things that we should focus on? I want to hear from you tonight. Scotty, are you there? Scotty? Okay, maybe not. I hope everybody can hear me. Okay, I do want to hear what you have to say in regards to the blueprint for success. What are your thoughts? What can we focus on? What should we do to improve our lot, and not just ours in this time and generation, but for future generations? One thing I always look at, and I do have to say I admire this, is the fact that these people like the Bushes, Prescott Bush and all of these people, they have made certain that their offspring have wealth. They create generational wealth. And that's something that I would love to see us as Black people do, begin to learn how to create that generational wealth. Either it be through starting a company, an empire, or maybe someone in the family passes on and they leave some money. That's a lot. But a lot of people are able to, quite a few people are able to create wealth in that manner. So Just hold 1 second. I'm going to try to get the mic open, and we will be right back.
It appears that we have lost Black Rose again, and so we will work to get her back. I apologize for that. We'll be right back. You're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, New Black Media for the New Millennium. Stay tuned. Caller at the 228 area code. Who do we have? You're dialed into the Lotus Place Radio. I do see your mic. Yeah. I'm sorry, who is this?
This is Mother Dunning.
Hey,
how
greetings.
How you doing tonight?
Greetings. You want to help us out and help fill in for Sister Rose as she's in transit? And her mic is open, but I don't hear anything, so yeah. She moving behind these enemy lines,
okay,
so let's... Okay, there she goes.
I'm back. Thank you, Scotty.
You're welcome.
I was calling for you. Thank you for opening up Delta's mic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, because
Delta
got plenty of little hot topics you want to talk
about. Ooh, bring them on, Delta. Come on, give us those hot topics.
So y'all see the young man that was up in Washington, D.C., 18 years old. He is a college student, and he goes to the bank. And we need to find out what bank he was in.
Okay.
Because they didn't give the name of the bank. Well, he was in the bank, and he was trying to be a gentleman. And a white woman was coming in the bank, and the young man stepped back and and I'm going to call it just like I see it. He let the white woman walk in ahead of him, trying to be a gentleman. Then the young man, he was on his way. He went to get money from the ATM because he said that he was going to some activity but at his school, but whatever it was, the school activity was canceled. So the young man was debating, should he take the money out of his ATM or not take it out? The white woman says that the one that he was being nice to and let her in the door first, says that she felt threatened by him. Yeah, have y'all noticed all this white folk syndrome coming up where I feel threatened now, just like the police? Do you not know that the police, they called the police, the two young men, college students, left the bank, walking down the road with the backpack on. The young man saw the police coming, and he said he ran because the police car almost hit him. He had no idea the police was coming at him. And he ran because he said he was afraid, and he thought they tried to hit him. They throw the young man down on the ground, and it's so sad. It makes you so angry how they manhandled him just because the white woman said that she felt threatened. Then after they searched the young man, they found out the young men didn't have anything on them. Then they gonna try to use the excuse that it was a mistaken identity, and then the another police came, and the young man confronted them and wanted to know why. So the other police gave an explanation and told him that the white lady said she saw you at the bank and she felt threatened. They using the same racist code that the police are using. They feel threatened. Just like the little black boy at the school with the little Asian mixed white girl. She says she felt threatened. We better wake up as people. Something is going on. Okay, then we have another case. We have another police case where the young man was standing somewhere in Texas. And he was like in a mall or somewhere, and he was just walking, him and two more boys. I'll pull it up when I get a chance. He was walking, and the police says that they, you know how you're not supposed to like walking or gathering. I don't know what they said the children was doing, but the young boy said they profiled them for no reason. But anyway, they
sure they did.
Young, and
so what the police officers were saying that they stopped them because what they were loitering, standing around?
Well, they weren't standing around. It was like four or five black children walking through the mall. They was college students.
Okay.
And
so what was the reason for the police officers stopping them while they were potential shoppers?
They said that somebody called them. And I guess said they were walking, acting suspicious or something in the mall. And one black boy, they threw him down. And I got so angry. If you go online, I posted a video on my Facebook. It's just ridiculous how they are doing these young people.
It's not just the young people. You remember they slammed down that elderly senior man that had a golf club that he was using as a cane, and they slammed him down. The Indian man that the lady called on and said that he was, she said a black man was walking around looking suspicious, and he was just here visiting his family, and they body slammed him. So it's not just the young people.
And you absolutely right. And he was here visiting his grandson, getting ready. They had the birth of a new baby. And he flew all the way from overseas to meet his new grandchild that was born. And so he just decided to take a walk through the neighborhood. And it left him paralyzed. He's permanent paralyzed on one side. Something is going on. It's just like it is with stealing the kids out of foster care. It's just like they got a new way of making money. It's just like with the foster care, taking the people, the poor black people, children, and putting them in the homes, and even putting them in some black homes, are going along with it to make money. This is a new money racket. It is a new Jim Crow, a way to make money off of young, poor families. And it's just sad. Then we got another breaking news story. Everybody going overboard about Lamar Odom, about him, talking about him and the drugs. Now, they don't even know if the boy had drugs. They said the boy was at a whorehouse. Well, if he want to go to the whorehouse, that's him. He have a right to go and lay up with 15 whores at one time. They don't have a thing to do with it. Oh, they trying to say it's a disgrace. Now, believe me, I wouldn't go do it. But that's his business. What he do with his penis and his body, that's him. But don't get on TV every time. We know he may have had a drug problem. Don't get me wrong. We know that was alleged. He had a drug problem. But living in this United States, it's surprising that you don't have a drug problem or anything else with all this prejudice and hate going on. And these people over here in America, black people, is so stressed out from the things that's being done, and nothing is being done about it. So
let me ask you this, Delta. I have a question about this Lamar Odom story, because I think I saw a picture of him or something, but I hadn't had an opportunity to really dig into their story. So are people upset because he was at a whorehouse, or is it the drugs?
Well, Nancy Grace was going on and on by him being at the whorehouse.
Okay, let me say this. Number uno, who is Nancy Grace to sit here and try to say something about this young man, Odom, or anybody else going to a whorehouse when Hugh Hefner, who has had the Playboy Mansion with all types of salacious behavior and indecent proposals going on?
Nevada has legalized prostitution. I'm sorry, ladies, I just wanted to provide some information from what I knew about the story, but Nevada has legalized prostitution. It's a victimless...
Yes, it sure does.
Yeah, so he wasn't breaking the law.
Yeah, they said
yeah,
it's legal.
So, yeah, and that's where they had the Democratic debate last night in Nevada, so... Yeah.
Exactly. So you know what they were trying to do. Anytime you have any kind of convention in Las Vegas, you know it's nothing but debauchery and just all kinds of crazy bullshit going on and sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Anyway, go ahead, Scotty. What were you saying? I just had to say that.
Well, that's all I just wanted to say. That's all I just wanted to point out that it's legal.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
Okay. So now that's a good point because I didn't know that. Okay, so he was at a legal whorehouse, probably the Bunny Ranch or whatever, in Las Vegas. So what are they complaining about? He went to a legal place. I mean, what's the problem?
He checked in on Saturday, and the man told Nancy Grace he was a client, and if he wanted to come there and chill out, it was nothing wrong with it. He said it's legal, it's nothing wrong with him coming there. But Nancy Grace said, well, let's call it like we see it. It's a whorehouse.
So if he wanted to
go there and get his freak on. It's not like he was supporting
it's not like he was supporting it's not like he was supporting illegal human trafficking and sex trafficking of young girls out here on the street that's going on all over America. Yeah, he went to a legal place with consenting adults and employees who get checked for diseases and all. It's totally regulated in Nevada and other places in the world, so Nancy Grace need to come off her high horse on that.
She needs to sit her raggedy ass down because that does not even make any sense for her to sit there and try to criticize it. She's just trying to make news. She's just trying to get ratings because that's stupid. That's legal. Everybody know about the Bunny Ranch. Hey, let's take a break. Let's take a quick break. Let's come right back on this because Delta, that's a good hot topic.
And don't forget that, and let's not forget when we go on our break, if our caller coming in, our special caller supposed to call in at 9:30.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thank you, Bill.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
Hello. Okay, so we are back. All right, and Delta, I don't know that young lady's phone number.
Okay,
what
let
number
me pull it
calling.
Up.
So if you are on the line, she can just press star 6-1, and then that way we can open up her mic and anybody else's mic if you
would like to share your thoughts. If you have a comment or a question.
Okay, let me give you her number. Oh, we okay. let me just give you the last four because I'm going to give our whole number out on the app. The last okay. four numbers is 8304.
Okay. All right. All right. And so back to this Odom. I mean, that is just insanity for Nancy Grace or anybody else. They're just picking on him because, excuse me, these people
Oh, wait a minute. Let me tell you, wait one moment, y'all. I forgot to tell you this.
Okay.
This is really hot. Now, we all know the what you call them, the Kardashians, is nothing about black gingolino and black money. And that's all they want to get them, some black peanuts and some black money.
Do y'all know
Chloe and Lamar filed for a divorce? And let me tell you how them white gold diggers is. They got it so smart. This girl mama locked this divorce up so good. The divorce is not, they still legally married, but they have signed the papers, but it hadn't went through yet. And the mama got in the, it's in the contract that, I guess, I don't know, did he put it in the divorce contract, or how did it come about? That if he get incapacitated, that she takes full control over him.
Oh, so she becomes
so now,
power of attorney or something?
Yes, that's correct. You absolutely correct.
Well, he's the one that let them sucker him into that. So, I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't have any sympathy for him because time and time again, we keep telling these black men and women, you better know what you're getting yourself into when you're dealing with these people. So,
and then the Brafa man said tonight on Nancy Grace that Lamar was able and financially able to stay there at the Brafa. He had 2 to 3 girls in the room, and he took over
Wait a
about
minute.
10 of those.
Oh, you said Odom or yes,
Lamar. Lamar. What, I don't know.
Okay, wait a minute, because, wait a minute, are we talking about
the Kardashian girl person?
Okay.
The Kardashian
okay, so that's
girl.
Lamar Odom. Odom. That's the one that was at the
brothel.
The brothel.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay.
So she done come in, her mother and Kim Kardashian and the faggot daddy. They
Ooh,
all
wait a minute. Not faggot. The transgender deal.
Whatever you want to say. Well, they all...
He's transgendered.
They all... I ain't going to even go there with you. They all at the hospital. They all at the hospital up there now.
Uh-huh.
Now they all on TV talking about... Well, you know they putting it out that she's got power of attorney over him. Because she ain't even, the divorce ain't even final. Don't you know them Negroes finna stop that divorce where it won't go final? Because if he dies, she's still legally his wife, and they saying, now let's be for real, that's the way they saying it's looking
well,
right
now.
Well,
what is he doing at the hospital? What is he doing? I thought he was just at the brothel.
Girl, the man is, girl, they really saying the man is dead. Really, basically. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Lamar Odom?
Listen, you ain't heard the story?
No,
right,
I have not.
Right, okay, well, let me explain this. Scotty,
yeah,
you have the whole story.
You got to give us these details and tell us what's going on. And we have our guest caller to call in and Mother Hattie.
I did give you the detail. Let's go to our guest caller, and then we can come back. If you want me to, or else we can, because the guest caller, let's pick up on that,
and I'll try to pull this story up. Let me welcome in first Mother Hattie. Mother Hattie, I say hi,
hello.
How are you?
Hi.
Hey, Mother Hattie, you've been so busy.
Hi there. Yes, we're still working on my dear friend's husband, Dr. Robert Brock. He's
absolutely
passing on.
Yes, and we want to talk about him because
Mother Hattie on your show on yesterday, we started our discussion on reparations, and we had some differing of opinions. So
always
bring that back up tonight. Oh yeah, and it's always beautiful. It's always
I was gonna say the beauty of minds.
yes, absolutely. So Mother Hattie, we also have a guest caller that wants to call in and share a story. She shared her story with Delta. And we spoke briefly with her on this morning.
Wonderful.
So, Delta, you want to introduce her? She's on the line, and we welcome you in.
Okay, really, I don't really know the young lady personally, but one of my church members told her about my situation with my granddaughter. So she called me last night pretty distraught about her nephew. And she was telling me that her nephew was in California. And they did her just like they did me, led me to believe that telling her that the baby had stayed there for 6 months and then they gonna let her get the baby. Then after the young
baby.
Let's
let her tell the story. Let's let her tell the story. I just want you to tell us her name and introduce her. Delta trying to tell the woman story. Let's welcome you in.
My name is Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. Welcome in.
Thank you for talking to me, but my name is Tammy Balford, and one of my friends, Yvonne, had told me that I should talk to Miss Dorothy because she had been in a similar situation like what I'm going through. And long story, so I'm going to shorten it up. But my brother had a baby by a woman who was on drugs. And as soon as the child was born, they took the baby from her. Now, my brother happened to be in the hospital with a burst appendix when the baby was born. So they placed the baby with my daughter. She lives in Sacramento, California. I live in Mississippi.
Okay.
Now, my brother got out. He was doing fine. But he ended up getting locked up for selling drugs. The child was a year and a half old at the time. He actually turns 3 today.
Hmm.
When the child was at his girlfriend's house, the mother went there, and the girlfriend let him take the baby because she don't know, you know, what rights the mother have. So I called the police because I know she's not supposed to be around the child at all. They tell me to call Child Protective Services, which is the same as DHS here in Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
So I called them up. They couldn't locate her. When they finally did locate her, they took the child into services. So right then and there, we step up. You know, I'm thinking I'm going to get the child. They go, no, we're going to do reunification with the mother. And the mother wants the child placed over here with this friend of hers, like 22-year-old young woman.
Mm-hmm.
But they said if she don't do what she's supposed to do in 6 months, you could adopt him. Your daughter could adopt him. Your brother could. So we all call. We give them our information. 6 months go by. Same story. They said, we're going to give her 6 more months. She's still on drugs. We still want to give her a chance. 6 more months go by. Now, this is a whole year later. Every time we call, they don't give us the new worker. They make us find out for ourselves. They don't give us any information. We are left to find out for ourselves. My daughter has court-ordered visitation. She goes to see them every week.
Okay.
They told me when I come down, I can't visit because it ain't going to be in the best interest of the child. He don't even know me. And I can see that because he's 3. He hasn't seen me since he was a year and a half old. They just been telling us that at this point we could take him. But now there hasn't been no worker on the case. A lot of times we'll call and they're like, he doesn't have a worker yet. Well, a week ago he was assigned a worker and she calls me. And she goes, oh, no, we're not going to move him. Once we place a child, we don't never move him.
Hmm.
My daughter went to her visit today. She sees him once a week. When she went to the visit, the visitation worker said, hey, the social worker contacted me and said to cut your visits to once a month. It's like they're shutting us out. They never even gave us a chance to even try to get the child. They didn't work with us at all. The mother of the child, she's 8 months pregnant with somebody else's baby. She doesn't want to have nothing to do with the Child Protective Services because she knows if they see her, they're going to try to take this child. So she basically just washed her hands of this baby. And the foster mother is trying to adopt the child. And they're letting her adopt him. She doesn't want us to see the child. They said she doesn't have to. Now, the foster mother would let the biological mother keep him on the weekends. She wasn't supposed to do that. The biological mother would go around my daughter, Tatiana, and would go around my brother, Lee, and say, hey, I'm getting him back in September. And they were believing her. But in actuality, the foster mom was going to adopt in September. When the social worker told me, she goes, well, nobody's seen the child. I said, yeah, they see the child all the time. She said, how did they see the child? I said, well, he's with his mom. They said, no, there's no way that she gets him with the mom because he cannot be around his mother, period. I said, well, my daughter was just with the mother and the child Saturday. They called us the foster parent instead of investigating. And said, and they told them what I said. So the foster parent got mad at me and said, she's not going to let me see him anymore. And I said, let me tell you something. I do want my nephew, but I'm not trying to put salt on you. But I was under the impression that the biological mother could have him. When I told that social worker that, I told her that believing the biological mother was able to be around him. They didn't even investigate it. They just went right back and, you know, caused conflict and confusion. The whole thing has just been a mess from the beginning.
It sounds like the scam that continues to go on. We hear this from city to city and state to state. So, Delta, you want to shed a little light on
her? I want her to tell her story about how she went back in petition. She told me, Tammy told me, they went back in, the young girl who had the baby do not have a job, is in college and ain't but 22 years old, and they're going to let this child adopt.
Well, I don't know if she does not have a job. She probably does work, but I know she is in school for nursing. I know she's 22 years old. She's 22, she's 23, she's really young. And the reason why I knew her age, because I had contacted her mother, and I said, you know we want our nephew. I said, is your daughter going to try to adopt him after this first 6 months, you know? And she goes, oh, no. She's not going to do that. She wants him to be with family. See, this is what how it was saying. And she goes, my daughter's really young. She's in school to be a nurse. You know, so, and the foster parent doesn't even have any children. So I'm thinking, why are you giving this to a young person when here I am? I'm a homeowner. I'm a self-employed business person. Why aren't you working with me? My daughter, she's 28 years old. She lives in Sacramento. She had the baby the first year and a half of his life with my brother. Why all of a sudden the mother just steps in and you work with her, and knowing this woman already has two other kids in the system? You know, they should have looked at her track record and done everything they could to place the child with family in the first place. I think they erred. They messed up. I want them to fix it.
So Are you saying it's the foster parent or the actual mother that has children in the system? I think I missed it.
The biological mother has two other children, and they were placed in Louisiana. Then she has this child, and then she's about to have another baby next month. And the baby that is in question is her third child, my nephew. If they would have looked at her history, they should have knew, hey, this reconciliation probably is not going to work. See, this is her third go-around, you know? Uh-huh. They should have said, this is her third child. It's probably not going to work. Let's make sure this child is with family instead of being with a stranger. And then all of a sudden, this stranger got more rights than us.
So, go ahead, Deb.
And then also, what she was saying, too, is that the young lady went back in petition and said the baby had special needs. And
right.
She told me, and so that's the code word when they have special needs. That's the code word to get double the amount of money.
Uh-huh. Well, explain,
right, because he's a drug baby.
I'm familiar with that. Explain to listeners, Delta, who are unfamiliar with the double money and how they receive more money if a child has special needs.
Okay. If a child, you may be getting about $1,200 or $1,500 a month. Then if you go back and petition the court because the baby mother was on drugs, and you go back and petition that court and say this child is hard to handle and this child have special needs just because the parents was on drugs, that means your fee goes up to $3,000 for one child. And so, to me, this somebody is schooling this young girl, because no 22-year-old girl knows this. So somebody's got to be schooling this 22-year-old child and telling her what to do.
And I believe the biological mother is.
And then also, there was a big where a bunch of social workers just went to prison. And there was about three or four of them just went to prison, and they were getting kickbacks. The social workers was taking the kids and placing them in their friend's home. Y'all can Google the story and pull it up. And they was placing the kids in their friend's home, and the friends and the social worker and them would get paperwork drawn up so the kids can be declared special needs. And they will get all this money, and the social workers and the family members, they friends, were splitting the money, and they are in prison right now because it made the news.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there's another situation. If you have a biracial child, if you have a child that's black and white. And I learned this with my granddaughters. When I hired a lawyer, he went in my paperwork, and he asked me, was my granddaughters biracial? And I told him, no, they're not biracial. They full black. He said, well, it's in your paperwork. Your granddaughters are biracial. And I began to dig on that, and I found out the state of Minnesota, when you place a biracial child in foster care, the state of Minnesota pays, so if Minnesota paying it, other states are paying it. The state of Minnesota pays extra money for biracial children because they said they are hard to handle. And they get a lot of money for that. And the social worker told me so. I'm not talking here. I'm talking to you what the social worker told me out of her own mouth. She said that's in there because they get more money because they said biracial kids are hard to place. And see, and this is the new Jim Crow law. And we got to let people know what is going on. What is going on in America with people of color. And not only that, poor white families too. If you don't have the means and money, you are not able to get your loved ones anymore, because the name of the game now is all about money. Who gonna make the most money off of the child? It ain't about getting the child back to the family anymore. It's about who gonna make the most money.
And I wasn't even an option. Let me just share this with our audience. If you have a question or a comment, please press *61. Miss Tammy is seeking anyone that could share some legal advice or some emotional support, or could point her in the right direction as to what she should do in terms of handling her case. We're talking about the Blueprint for Black Success. As I mentioned in the beginning, we have so many issues and problems in our communities. We can actually have several working groups on working on a variety of our problems, the plethora of problems that we have. We can have people working on reparations, people working on how they're trying to continue to take these children out of the homes of families. This is cultural assassination.
and I want to make a statement about my experience that I have too before we close out tonight. But this is cultural assassination, because as African people, we keep our families intact. We take care of grandmother and grandfather, and they're near us, or we live near them. Like, even when my mom and I live in separate housing, we still stay close to each other. I recall at one time my grandmother, myself, my mother, and my best friend, we all lived in the same building, because we're all close like that. I mean, and we still stayed in the same neighborhood, same community. And so it's of our nature to be near our families and take care of them. And so we need some serious black lawyers that can really start fighting causes like this and take it from a cultural standpoint, because when you're trying to work with their little bullshit, you can see what happens, nothing. We gotta take this on up to a different level. It's time to do something completely different. And until we can, I think, just my opinion, take it from a cultural standpoint, like with the Native Americans, like, hey, this is protected. This is our culture. Just like the Jewish people with their little hats and stuff. I can't think of what they call those, but just like them, hey, this is our culture. This is us. This is a part of us. So I just want to share that. So *61 if you have a question or a comment, or you want to share some, share your experience. If you have,
you know, this is
now my daughter talking to me, said I missed some important stuff.
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because this happens all over the world, because when you see these families being broken up and mothers killed in front of their children, and children being extracted from families and placed in this or that type of, under a warlord or whatever, they're separating the children from their cultural lineage to teach you about yourself, to teach you how to plant and what to plant and when to plant it, so that you can thrive and survive. Different things like that, so they know exactly what they're doing. They know exactly what they're doing. They're taking us away. And when they can take you out of your family, when they can take you out of the root of your culture, then you just lost. And that's what we have. And then you're going to have these children that grow up in these white families. And guess what? Those are going to be the very first people that we got to fight. Those are going to be the ones going right up against us, because, hey, nothing's wrong. Everything is fine. Oh, daddy and mommy treated me good. And when you do some investigating, you'll find that a lot of these people that are adopting these black children and bringing them over from East Africa and different places, Mali, they run over here and grab all of these children from Tanzania and everywhere, and they have these children working, as they say, they have them working as au pairs and all of this, or they're just their children and they love them. They have these children doing some modern day damn slavery. They're beating them. These people can't even leave out the house, only to go to the grocery store and come back, and they're afraid to say something. They tell them, "Oh, I'm gonna pay for your tuition to school and all of this," and these people never get a chance to leave out of the home. They're enslaved. These people are so sick and wicked. I know I went off on a tangent. I digress, and I do apologize. So, Tammy or Mother Hattie or Delta?
Yes, I'm here.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, another thing like that really is really close to my heart is it's just been me and my two little brothers and my mother. And our mother passed away. Then my daughter and my brothers are the same age. You know, they grew up together. We have a little tiny family. This is my only nephew. I don't have no other nephews or nieces. And this is just, it's really breaking my heart. It's like, and when I would tell people this story, I don't think they could believe it. Like, your family, yeah, right. That doesn't happen. I think that people would look at me and say, there got to be something wrong with you guys. Like with my daughter or my brother, when there's not. We're good people. My brother has a background in childhood education. My daughter's 28 years old. She has a good reputation. She's right there in Sacramento. She's done everything they've asked her to. But it doesn't matter. When we fought, like, to get him a social worker. When we finally got one a week ago, we felt like, okay, maybe somebody will listen. But she's like, oh, no. She didn't even care. She even asked me, well, did you try to get him? She wasn't even familiar with anything about me. Everybody we call, every worker, we have to explain the whole process over and over. We're nobody. We have no voice at all. And that's just how they treat us, like we have no voice.
Yeah.
We're not special. We're not family. We're nothing to them. How can they do this? It's not right. I'm waiting for somebody to say, oh, surprise, or, you know, we've seen this gross mistake in judgment, or we've seen this gross error that we made, and we want to fix it. But they don't care.
No, they don't. And unfortunately, Tammy, people like yourself, Delta, this has just been a rude wake-up call to what these people are really about and what they're doing. And it's sad that it happened. It has to happen in such a way that it personally affects you and your family. But that's how they operate. That's how the system operates. And it's just an upgraded method of their taking an African woman's baby when she has her child after labor. It's the same thing, pretty much. They're just taking our children and placing them in different homes where they can make money. It's the same thing that they've always done. But we're shocked because we're like, oh my God, I thought slavery was over, and I thought these people, you know, were practicing civil rights and abiding by affirmative action and the laws and all this. No! No, these people are not. These people are wicked. So you have to fight, and I would love for you to give out your information so people can contact you, because I keep hearing these stories, and I really would love to see some people come together and campaign to make it legal, make it a law, whereas you, and I thought it was already a law, you have to go through all of the channels to place that child with the family, and the family should not have to fight for the child. That is,
my daughter did everything they told her to do. She passed the background. She passed it. She went through the kinship program. They've cleared her house. We're sitting there on Mother's Day last year. They're like, we're going to court. I'm swearing they're going to bring him home, you know. Mm-hmm. And then when they come back and say, we decided, and I flew down there. They was like, we decided that he's going to go with the mother's choice or whatever. But it wasn't like we didn't do everything. It's just that they overlooked us, and then now they feel like they don't have to tell us when the court dates are. They don't have to tell us what's going on. They don't have to keep us notified.
That's because you don't have a lawyer.
So what are your next steps? What are your next steps? Well, what are you going to do?
Well, my brother, when he got locked up, he got 5 years, and we found out he's getting an early release next month. And I feel like he's going to be the one to have the voice. My daughter, Tatiana, because she's there, and she's been going through the visits, and she's been talking to the people and all up in her face, I think we need to get an attorney for them, for us, to represent the family. We didn't care which one had him. We just wanted him. We all tried to get him individually. They told us that they would work with Tatiana because she's closer. She's had him previously. She has a really good relationship with him. But they still ain't haven't worked with her.
If you don't get a lawyer when you know it, and if you don't hurry and get a lawyer when you know anything, it's going to be too late. And
yes, ma'am. That's what we're going to try to do.
And you cannot wait on your brother, because your brother's locked up right now. Like I told you, they're going to use that against you, because, you know, I know, because they pull out everything. So what I'm saying...
Hey, Delta, just hold that thought. I do hate to interrupt you, but just hold that thought. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We'll be right back.
thought about getting into podcasting but don't know where to start? Have something to say to the world but don't know how? The popularity of podcasts and internet radio streaming continues to grow with millions of people on the planet gaining internet connectivity through a multitude of devices. In the current media age, people can browse internet radio stations or listen to podcasts right from the dashboard of their cars. There are few barriers to anyone who wants to produce internet-based media. To encourage media production for black people by black people, if you are an independent black media producer or want to become one, the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project is offering unlimited and unmetered podcast hosting services below industry pricing. Need more information about the industry and the technology? Find out how to create internet-based radio broadcasts and or podcasts at www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com. Again, that's www.knowledgebase.blacktalkradionetwork.com.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
Anybody there?
Oops, I'm just back. I'm going on, just talking, and on me.
I'm here.
But we are back here at the Lotus Place, and press star 6-1 if you would like to share your comments or if you have a question. We are talking about the blueprint.
But could I share a strategy with that young lady?
We would love for you to, Mother Hattie. You always bring the wisdom. But let me welcome in Aja quickly. Aja is joining us, and Aja will update you and our listeners that maybe just tuned in to what we're discussing here tonight with Miss Tammy and her situation with her nephew. Okay, Mother Hattie.
Okay. Tammy, one other strategy might be, and it may be later than sooner, is to, you know, let your brother know that one of the routes that he could take is, okay, he's in jail for, you said, drug dealing?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So part of the issue is that many of the drug dealers are addicts themselves, and so he really should have been in a treatment program instead of jail, and you gave the mother an opportunity to get herself off drugs for a year. So the father, biological father, needs that same opportunity to be able to not be on drugs. So you might want to, you could approach it from that manner also.
Yeah, he's willing to do whatever it takes, and we're all supporting him, just like we were all willing to support the mother, you know, for her to do what she needed to do. And we're all willing to support Stephen in doing whatever he needs to do.
Okay, so what about the strategy that Mother Hattie stated? Do you think that he maybe, has he written a letter to whoever?
He's written a letter to the court.
Okay.
He's actually written a letter to the court saying that he wants his son back. He does not want to lose his son, and they made a court date October 28th, and I'm going to fly down there. I will be there. My daughter will be there. My brother will be there. My aunts will be there. As much family that I can get, because I am from California.
Well, when you go, all y'all can go. I'm telling you, I've been down that road. All y'all can fly down there, but you need a lawyer. You need a lawyer.
Yes, now,
to. You gotta have a lawyer.
Have a lawyer.
Okay. Not only do you need a lawyer, you need a lawyer that is well versed in child protection law and family situations like this, because if the lawyer doesn't put the right stance at the outset in the file for the case, you're just worthless.
About 2 days ago, my brother gave me the information for his lawyer, and tonight I've just been writing letters to him. I've been writing letters to the supervisor. I've been writing letters to the social worker, trying to get them all familiar again with who we are and what we would like to happen. I don't know this lawyer. This is somebody that they had assigned to him, the court.
Okay, so is this a public defender?
I don't know if it's a public defender. I think it's like a family lawyer. I did look him up on the internet today.
No, but no, they got him. What she's trying to say is they got him for your brother, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, he's an appointed lawyer, Miss Hattie.
He's not a public defender. He would be like a family lawyer. He's with the
who is they? Who is they? Who is they that appointed him to your brother's
case? I think it would be the social services. I'm not really sure.
It's probably the same thing. You really need a private lawyer that somebody pays some money to, instead of maybe everybody flying, maybe pool that money together.
Yes, yes.
And get a lawyer.
I'm totally with that.
That's the main thing. Cause see, like I was telling her, Miss Hattie, I said, "Hi." She got to have. Well, I made my mistake is I got a lawyer, but I should have had a family lawyer who would deal strictly in family law. And see, and that's what you got to get. You need to tell your daughter to start looking for a lawyer that deals in family law.
Did she just say that she had a family lawyer?
He is a family lawyer, but he's somebody that we just got his information 2 days ago.
They're not going to go against each other.
That's right. That's all I'm saying.
And
you need to find a lawyer. You need to find a lawyer who, you got to do a lot of research to find a good lawyer. You got to find a lawyer who's gone up against DHS before in some cases around child protection or around custody cases and won them. That's what you really got to do. You got to find lawyers like that. Looking in the book ain't going to do it. You got to actually do some real research. And you got a little bit of time to do that. Just maybe Google in for that area lawyers who won child protection cases or something like that, or not child protection just itself, but custody cases against DHS or just against that agency, whatever they call yours in that area. You got to do a lot of research, because you can even pay a lot of money and still end up at square one with these lawyers if they don't know
just
what
like
they're doing.
Me. That is correct. You're right. Just like me.
So they'll take a case.
Wow, everybody got quiet.
Go ahead.
Hello.
No, the phone cut off or something. I would like to make a couple of suggestions. I didn't come in on the beginning, but I can get a gist of what is needed from this recent conversation. So one thing that I have always believed in is do research on my own when it comes to my legal rights, because there's a lot of information that's out there for us, and I have represented myself in court. It was a big case, but it did involve me being out of some money on a monthly basis, but because I knew my rights, I was able to fight and win. Now, I'm not suggesting that you do that, but what I'm suggesting is that not only you, and don't put all this burden on yourself, but if it's several of the family members going down, going for the court hearing, then obviously you all are very supportive of your family members. So in saying that, then some of you, at least two of you, need to do, it would be wise to do some research on your own. As Ms. Hattie was saying, become familiar with the rights in this particular case so that you can talk to that lawyer, whoever he is, intelligently. Ask him some questions. You say you have his contact number. Ask him some mm-hmm. questions, some serious questions, so that you can kind of feel him out and see if he knows what he's doing and if he knows, if you can tell if he's capable. Also ask him, has he had any cases like this before? What was the outcome? You know, just like somebody's getting ready to operate on your body. You know, you want to know what the doctor has done before, how successful he has been before. So I say, just because an attorney has been appointed for you, even just because you hired somebody, do some background on him and see if he is suitable for your relative to handle your case, whether you're paying him or not, because mm-hmm. his capability could put you way ahead or set you way, way back. So don't mm-hmm. leave it all up to him. Just like you're getting ready to go to surgery, don't just say, well, what am I going to pack? And I sure hope it turns out right. Do some research on the person who's going to be operating on you, and also do some research on the person that's going to be putting your butt to sleep. We forget about the anesthesiologist. He could put you to sleep, and you don't wake up and don't have anything to do with the doctor. So what I'm saying yeah. is take it upon yourselves, not just you, but some couple of your family members, to do some research on what you're about getting ready to step into, because we make that mistake of just leaving it all up to them. And we accept
right.
what they come up with. We accept. We say, oh, well, it didn't turn out right. I guess it wasn't in the plan, and I prayed about it, but it just... Mm-hmm. No, do some mm-hmm. things on
That's
your
right.
own.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave it all up to them, because I tell you, I'll end it with this. When they say practicing doctors, they mean literally that. They're practicing.
They
a lot of them, they don't know. They have to go in there. What do you think they do when they say,
wow.
excuse me for a second? They go in there, look at that book, and I'm like, okay, let's try this. They don't know. They're trying.
They sure do, because
attorneys don't always know. They wish they passed that test, but they don't
That's
always
exactly
know.
Exactly what they would do. They don't have a clue. They come
yes.
in and they write down. That's why they take those little scribbly notes. And then
uh-huh.
they come and they all confer and they all ask each other questions and they go
yes.
and then they come back and tell you some old crazy stuff.
Yes.
Also
yes.
they test these pharmaceutical drugs on people.
Yes.
That's a
yes.
big issue, these pharmaceutical drugs. But listen, Miss Tammy.
Yes, ma'am.
I have to echo what Aja just said.
Mm-hmm.
Informed. A lot of times these people get away with these types of things because we neglect to do our due diligence.
Yes.
Yeah, they want us to just disappear.
Fair. Yes.
They're not.
Let me say this about, and this parallels this blueprint for success. A lot of times we think that these people are playing a fair game. It's not a fair game.
Right.
It's not fair at all.
Right.
Yeah. It's not.
So yep. I feel like they wish we'd have gone away by now. They try to be so final, but I'm not going to give up. That is my mother's grandson. I'm not going to just allow them to do this. At least I'm going to fight with everything I know how or anything I can do until the fight is over. I'm not just going to walk away, but that's what they expect. I think at this point, to them, we're just a nuisance, you know?
Of course, because you're actually demanding your rights. You're actually saying, I want my child. You're supposed to just sit on back, oh, go ahead, woman. We're going to wear you out. We're going to deplete your funds. And you'll sit down.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You know, in some universities, I don't know,
I mean, I'm sure they still do this, but in some universities, they have in the law department, sure, you can, Black Wells, you can help me out with this with your university dimensions and stuff, where they have cases, you know, for people who are going to law school and, you know, just want to study law, people like me who are just nosy. And, mm-hmm. and see if you can find some cases, like Mother Hattie was saying, Delta was saying, excuse me, I know it's, you don't have a lot of time, but make this time work this next 2 weeks mm-hmm. or so. Get busy. Mm-hmm. Get busy because mm-hmm. what you do within the next 2 weeks can make a hell of a difference in the years to come. Don't yes, sit ma'am. Back and just, you know, make a phone call. How's it coming? How's it coming? Ask some mm-hmm. deep questions. Ask some deep, mm-hmm. serious questions and let them know you're not just a nuisance. You know what you're talking about and you demand some action and work for whatever, whoever paying you, work for it.
And listen, mm-hmm. and listen, what church do you attend?
Church on the Rock.
Have you spoken with your pastor about this?
No, ma'am. I haven't really talked to too much of anybody except the social worker and a couple of people I know here for references.
Okay.
But
so anyway, so go and talk to your pastor.
Mm-hmm.
Who's tomorrow, Thursday?
That goes
you should
a
call
long
to the
way.
Church. You should go to the church and at least have a conversation with him or the assistant
yeah.
pastor or the first
yeah, that's
lady.
A good idea.
I would
yeah.
appeal to the first lady. That's what
yeah.
I would do. I would appeal to the first lady and
mm-hmm.
have someone go with you. And share this story and get your church behind you and have your pastor get involved, actively get involved. Because
yes.
as a member, how long have you been a member of that church?
I think what it is,
you
is I'm so
start
far.
Holding these pastors accountable. You need assistance, you need
yeah.
local assistance, and you need some attention, and you need some people. I'm sure that there's a lawyer in your congregation that if they knew about this case, they would pick it up pro bono for you and help you and walk you through this.
You got to
so
point
you
somebody
through this. You shouldn't go through this
alone.
And if it's not a lawyer in that congregation, damn it, it should be. But if it's not, then I know the pastor has a lawyer, so let the pastor have his lawyer, his attorney, assist you on this case.
That's a very
I'm
good idea.
I don't know why y'all don't be holding y'all pastors accountable, but that's what they're there for, to lead
they
the
They sure are.
So
they
he's
certainly
to
are.
So your pastor, I would first thing tomorrow morning, that's one thing I'd do, whether it works or not. At least you
right.
go through the channels. That's what that's what I'm saying. Just go through the channels. You never know who is out there that can assist you. But I guarantee you, your pastor can help you.
You sure
and
can.
Don't just you got to connect church and go to another one.
Yes.
Right, because
yes.
this is a crisis. This is a
yes.
crisis. So
this should be a determining point for you here.
And
far
also,
as that church is concerned.
Right. And when I left from his office, the next office I will go, or her meeting with her, the next place I will go is to my local congressperson. That's what I will do.
See
that's
where they're coming
do.
From.
And then I go to the news station. Just work all your channels. Just work all of your channels. You have to do everything. And it don't have to just be you. It can like she said, like
that's
I was
what
saying.
I'm saying. Yeah, get those
you
people to help you.
Be strategic about it. They're very
yes.
strategic about their theft.
Yeah.
So they're all
yes.
working together.
Yes.
They're all working
yes.
together. Like Delta
yes.
Delta said it. They have headhunters. Let's break this down,
yes.
Delta. Help me out with this. So they have the headhunters, right, that go out and seek out, they probably get a list from DHS, people that are on WIC and what is it, food assistance, SNAP and all of that. So they probably
mm-hmm.
get a list. And then so they
mm-hmm.
watch you, or they can just go by any local housing complex and just watch or watch certain people that have maybe been reported of having a mental breakdown. Or something
uh-huh.
like that. Okay, and go ahead, Delta. And so they point out
you
they follow those
correct.
People.
There was an article written, and we need to send that article to them.
They identify those people.
And they have sent this
explain
article.
How they work at Delta.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was an article written in 2012, but I still want to let her know in 2012 in Minnesota, and it's called Headhunters. And this man worked for the Department of Human Services, and he worked for them over 20-something years. And he said that they have trained them to go out and deliberately take kids from their parents. He said
they identify families that they can manipulate and take the children away from.
That is correct.
They identify certain families, and then the money that they make from the entire adoption process or the foster care, however they have it, again, once again, their strategic operation, the money is dispersed amongst this person, and they're just extrapolating children from families and placing them somewhere else and paying these people, and everybody's getting a break, which I don't even see what's so crazy about it, which lets you know that this part, to me, what I think is cultural assassination, because you're still giving money to somebody, so why not give it to the family? Like what Delta said. Delta said she didn't even have to have any money. She told the court, you don't even have to pay me, so that saves everybody money. So it's not about having the child and the family. That's what they want to do. It take the damn child out of the family.
So money can be made.
They're able to pay somebody else. They can have all of their little money. It's just a win.
And when we wake
up and realize this, then we'll know how to fight this craziness.
And we also want to say, like Rose, we want the people to know, because some, radio audience, we want people to know we're not advocating for kids to stay in a home where it's abusive at. And we want our listening audience to know that. That's not what we're saying, listening audience.
Mm-hmm.
We saying that if you got a family and your family have been checked out and went through all the procedures, and you want your family, we saying you have a right to your family. Now, if your family abusing you or mistreating you, you don't need to be with your family. And I wanted to put that out there because I don't want people to think, oh, they're going to let them know. That's not what we're saying. We're not advocating every child to stay in a home. If the child being abused, it needs to be removed.
Okay, let me interrupt you right there, because when we say abused, a child may think they're being abused because the parent slapped them because they came home at 4:00 in the morning, which is what I did to my child. So there are certain cases. There are certain, I just did a little tap. It wasn't a big hard slap, but you didn't fall down or nothing like that. I mean, really, it was like the little tip of my finger, you know. But because some kids, when the parent hollers at them, they'll say, I'm going to call the police on you, you know. So we all know what cases there are. You know, the parents are both of them are addicts and cannot take care of the child. The home is filthy. They're going to school with the same clothes on every day. They're not, their hair is not being combed, you know, things like that. Then we follow the proper procedure. We have CPS come, check out, see what the heck is going on. You know, is this continue, take the child out. But I don't want it to be a blanket if your child is being abused, because people have different ideas or concepts of what abuse is. What we're saying tonight is that there is a racket going on to take children out of the homes of certain qualified, quote-unquote, parents, and these children are being used as commodities. Darn the money that, you know, that the government has to pay out to the parents that they put the children into their homes. That's not important. The important thing, because they keep making money, the important thing is that these children are being used as a commodity.
They're being used as money making tools, and like you said, everybody gets a piece of the pie. And what we need to do is be aware that this is going on and be able to intelligently go in there and fight it. And fight it with the right tools. And all these tools that we have talked about tonight, you know, becoming knowledgeable of your legal rights, getting doing some research, getting some previous cases, getting your church involved. You know, just the energy from your church members alone going in your direction would help the case. So get more people involved. You know,
now, when you're saying you're in Mississippi, is that where you are?
Yes, ma'am, and my nephew is in California.
And the nephew's in California, okay.
So what do you think of this advice that you have received, Tammy? What do you think is doable for you immediately?
Well, since I had talked to Miss Dorothy and I talked to you guys, and I really think what I need to do is just try to pull my resources. I had already booked my flight. I was trying to cancel my flight because that was money I could have used toward an attorney. See, I'm going about it all wrong, and I'm knocking on the wrong doors, and now I have a little bit of more direction. Because you're thinking at one point somebody's going to acknowledge us, but if they haven't after all this time, they're not going to. And I need to try to call, even if I can't afford an attorney now, you know, like maybe I could get somebody that would accept the payment plan or... you know, I would need to contact an attorney there in Sacramento that can be there, that could file for guardianship for me or my daughter, my brother. Now, the Child Protective Services did tell us that they were going to work with Tatiana first because she was there. And I was thinking, you know what, I could have been using that $500 that I paid for a ticket. I could use that money to pay for her attorney. You know,
that is correct.
But now, you know, I do have a little bit of direction. I'm finished with gears.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break and we'll come right back. So your next step, you said that you were about to make your flight. We want to thank you for coming on. We're going to let you go ahead on and go because I know you're getting late. And we want to thank you for taking the time to let the community know what's going on with you. I think, was it Delta? Were you asking her something or Aja? Anybody have any last closing comments for her?
Yeah, my last comment to her is, please do not show up without a lawyer.
Okay. And share your information, how people can contact you if they...
And if I could ditto on that and say a good lawyer who is appropriate for these cases, just any lawyer is not going to do.
Yes, ma'am.
A family lawyer, one who has experience in fighting that agency for this kind of thing. And I would also talk with the Sacramento NAACP people and any other kind of civil rights organizations, Urban League, even though we all know what That's right, but I'd still put it out there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because they do know what's going on.
Yeah.
So with that.
Yes. Yeah. Excuse me. Am I on mute? No, okay.
So we can hear you.
Okay. Tammy, I didn't hear the, I'm going to send my energies out to you and your family.
But if anybody wanted to contact me, they can email me at TammyBalford@yahoo.com. And that's T-A-M-M-Y. Balford is B-E-L-F-O-R-D at yahoo.com.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thank you so much right now. Keep us abreast.
All right, you guys. Thank you.
What's going on? Okay. Good night. Good night, Tammy.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Tammy, I'm going to send you an email. This is Aja. I'm going to send you an email.
Okay, Aja.
I wanted to say. Yeah. All okay.
The
All right. Not mistaken.
Okay, ladies. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome.
Let me see here. I want to read something, and then I would love for Mother Hattie, you have our Women United statement.
Sure.
And we need to update people on the suggested sandals also. But King B couldn't join us tonight. He did send a message. Let me share this. Black nationalism, which we're talking about the blueprint for black success, black nationalism. Black nationalism advocates a racial definition or redefinition of national identity. I'm reading this from online. There are different indigenous nationalist philosophies, but the principles of all black nationalist ideologies are unity and self-determination, that is, separation or independence from European society. Martin Delaney, his birth dates were 1812, and he transitioned 1885. An African-American abolitionist is considered to be the grandfather of black nationalism. Inspired by the success of the Haitian Revolution, the origins of black and African indigenous nationalism and political thought lie in the 19th century. Am I not being heard?
We hear you. I hear you fine.
Oh, good. Okay. All right, and political, let me just start this sentence over. Inspired by the success of the Haitian Revolution, the origins of black and African indigenous nationalism and political thought lie in the 19th century with people like Marcus Garvey, Henry McNeil Turner, Martin Delaney, Henry Highland Garnett, Edward Wilmot Blyden, Paul Cuffee, etc. The repatriation of African-American slaves to Liberia and Sierra Leone was a common black nationalist theme in the 19th century. Marcus Garvey's Universal Negro Improvement Association of the 1910s and 1920s was the most powerful black nationalist movement to date, claiming 11 million members of black nationalism. And some of those people, one, Marcus Garvey, Mother Hattie, that's one of our people that we are supposed to report back on in terms of reparations, right?
Right.
Yes.
Next week.
And Dr. Brock, I didn't get a chance to... I think I may still have that clip of Dr. Brock. I hope so, Mother Hattie, and I'll play that. So while I am looking for that, Mother Hattie,
Would you like to read?
Sure.
And Delta, we're gonna have to allow you to read our statement occasionally, and we can just go do a roundabout. I think maybe a roundabout sometimes, each one of us reading, and I think that would confirm it. What are your thoughts? What do you think, Mother Hattie, Delta?
Absolutely, that's what we have to do. Internalize it.
Oh, I love it. I love it, to internalize it, yes. Delta, what are your thoughts? Sometimes maybe you'll read. Oh, dear. Did we lose Delta?
We lost her, maybe, I don't know. The phones are acting up. Always.
Oh, okay.
Okay, shall I start?
Yes, you shall.
Okay.
Please.
This is a working statement from Women United regarding the attacks on black women such as Rekia Boyd, Ayanna Stanley Jones, Sandra Bland, and many others. Women United denounce and detest the vicious attacks on black women we've been historically plagued with and seems to have escalated in more recent times. We are 100% human beings and deserve to be protected, and with equal justice under the law and other entities. The recent vicious behavior and disrespect of the lives of black women must stop. These are unconscionable, deplorable acts and actions occurring in a country that considers itself to be civil and democratic. A plan of action must be adopted and implemented immediately to stop the terror on black women. Women United is placing a call to action for all women groups, organizations, and men to rectify these crimes against the humanity of black women, to make your statement and act to protect the humanity of our sisters. Contact Women United at women.united7777@gmail.com.
Yes, I love it, Mother Hattie.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for reading the Women United statement. And we just ask for people, when you listen, go on to our Women United webpage, and also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram. We'll be sharing the dates and location of our second annual Women United convention. So if you missed it, you shall not miss it this coming year in 2016. I'm so looking forward to it, Mother Hattie.
Yes.
Maybe we should go to the Sin City. Can we go to the Sin City like everybody else?
What's the Sin City?
Sin City, Las Vegas, baby. So we can
have a
hangover. You never heard of Las Vegas being the Sin City? Yeah, they say Las Vegas is the Sin City. That's why
yes.
I said, how are you having a Democratic debate in the so-called Sin City? Don't you know what they're all about?
That's exactly. Cool.
Don't even get me started. I'm not even going to bring that in.
Yeah. Well, that city also has...
taking a vacation.
That city also has everything else that your city and my city have. They have schools. They have churches. So it depends on the circuit you're in as to where it is, you know, what's going on there. And I declare the same I declare the same sin is going on right in your town that they are having in Las Vegas.
Oh, you know it, honey. It really is. You know, all kinds of things going on over here in Houston, Texas. They have people falling out the van, suffocating, transporting people from across the border, and they sit here and shoot and kill and lie and say that they don't want these people over here. And just all kinds of things, human trafficking, drugs, killings, all of that, you know.
Same thing going on in there.
Yeah, but I would love to have the... I put that in as my bid, my vote. We were discussing, like, if we have the next Women United convention. I vote for Las Vegas. Well, I vote, too.
We'll see what the... our national board is thinking and
Mother Hattie, you never heard of the wild things and the wild fun in Las Vegas? that they have?
I've heard of it everywhere. I know Las Vegas is definitely a place where you can have, you know, the gambling thing is pretty much what I've heard about it. And I've been in there. We've been on conferences there, Secondary Principals Association, and I never saw any of that stuff because I chose to be in another circle of people. We went to our convention pieces. I went to church like I normally do when I'm at home. They have, you know, the schools are there. You go and visit schools. And so I didn't really get into that aspect of it because that's not my choice. And everybody's got their way. I'm sure some of the other people did participate in some of those things and what you're, you know, discussing. It was, so consequently, wherever I am, I find the same level and, mm-hmm. Like I said, the same things are going on in any city, USA.
You got that right. That is so.
Well, much. I've always wanted to go to Las Vegas. I've never been, and I just like the gold streets and all the fancy hotels and all the shows and things. You know,
mm-hmm.
It just seems like it's so much fun. You know.
Mm.
You can stay up all night. You don't know what time it is because the lights are always on, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I love Las Vegas.
I love it.
Yeah. I just like to go one time and
fly over to California. From there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's rather expensive there, too, though, isn't it?
Las Vegas? Well, you can get
a lot
because of the casinos.
A lot of people,
from what I understand and what I've checked out is that the shows are basically, you know, free, you know, because, and you can get really good deals on the hotel because they know you're going to spend all that money in the casinos. So it's a marketing thing to just get you there, you know. Mm-hmm. So not to live there, yeah, I think it is expensive to live there. But on the whole, but when you go to Las Vegas, you know, you just get you some money, you know, just be ready, you know, that's the kind of place that I've always thought of it as, you know.
Yeah, and a lot of people, a lot of the professional boxers have homes there in Las Vegas, like Mike Tyson. But now Las Vegas was one of the places where the housing bubble really collapsed that market. I think it was either one of the first or the worst, something like that. But Las Vegas got hit really, really bad during that time period. So, but anyway, I want to close out by playing this, a clip of this speech of Malcolm X speaking about Black nationalism, and I will play that, and then I want to play, I think this is, it's the Pan-African prayer. I hope that I can play that, but I just want to thank you, Aja, lovely Aja, and I thank you, Mother Hattie, I thank
you. You're welcome.
You're welcome.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you always, and oh my God. Delta, you were on mute. That's why we didn't hear from you. What happened, Delta? Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, I apologize. Oh, my goodness, Delta. I was working another screen. See, I didn't have my other computer sitting up, set up, so I only have one computer screen in front of me. So, Delta, I do apologize. Oh, my goodness, my love. She's been on hold. And I can't wait to get down there and have some of Brother Dunn's lemon pound cake. I'm going to lose 40 pounds just so I can eat some of his without any guilt for the holidays. I'm coming down there with Delta. Nothing like going down south for the holidays.
But we'll eat and then we'll walk.
Yes.
We'll eat and then we'll walk.
Yes, because we have to be TV ready. We have to be TV ready because we have big things happening here at the Lotus Place. So, but thank you. Hey, Delta, you know what? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I did look up this story about Larry Odom. I was just totally clueless. I have not heard anything about this story. And so, Delta, just we have like about 15 minutes. about 10 minutes, actually, because I want to play this clip. But give us an update, and let me share this part, these little updates. 11 p.m. Pacific, Lamar is still in a coma, and his heart is failing. Okay, so Lamar Odom, for those who don't know, because I was just probably like, who the hell is Lamar Odom? Lamar Odom, I had to kind of get it together and connect the Lamar Odom to the Kardashians, because I kind of was like, okay, wait a minute, I know their name, and I know
the thing that gets me how to watch. See, them white women.
Wait a minute. Hold up. People don't know who Larry Odom is. Let's update our listeners that may have just joined us, like Aja. Larry Odom was married to one of these Kardashian sisters. Okay, Aja. So you already know what the business is.
Yeah, that's all you need to say.
Exactly. So, of course, now this Negro is sick. And see, this reminds me of that young lady that called in, and I think Mother Hattie, you were on the line. I think Delta was on the line. Aja, I'm not sure if you were on the line that night. But she mentioned, and I'm just saying what she said based on her research from the medical journals and things of this nature, her research. These black men, when they have sex with white women, they start developing these cancers and these internal illnesses and cancers. And next thing you know, they're sick, and they're also transferring this to other women like us when they come back to visit us.
It's
something about mixing those systems that's not supposed to happen. Now, this is what she said, and if you think about it, something always tends to happen, some kind of mental breakdown, some kind of failing. Look at Tiger Woods. He was the best. Now all of a sudden,
He started looking bad. He doesn't even look the same.
But Lamar Odom is now in a coma, and his heart is failing, and he has serious problems with his kidneys and lungs, so he's dying.
Oh my goodness.
He's dying. He's in a coma. He's dead. But anyway, let's see. He was unresponsive because he was at the Love Ranch in Las Vegas, one of those, you know, legal brothels, Aja. And they conducted an investigation. So, Delta, what they're saying is he has some bad drugs. Is that it? He's fighting for his life.
No, they saying what? They not saying it's drugs because they don't know. But the ladies of the night,
they found him unconscious.
That was in the room with him. They told he had tucked the over the store counter. You can go to them Yang Yangs and buy.
What's the Yang Yang?
They call them Vietnamese.
Delta, you're not going to say Yang Yang. They're Vietnamese.
Okay, well, Lord, forgive me.
Yes, well, Christian lady.
Well,
oh, my God.
No, but that's what they call them, though. Anyway,
well, we're not going to call them
Yang Yang. They go there and they buy this Viagra. It's like it comes from China. And they said that he took, because he booked it for a week. He had been there since Saturday, and they found him, too. They said he took 7 to 10 Viagra pills.
How old is this person? What age? Is he in his 30s?
Yeah, Lamar in his 30s.
Okay, so that drug was originally introduced as something for older men, wasn't it? Right, for this thing they had.
Viagra started out. It was an accident. Viagra started out. If you do your do some research on it, it started out. They was trying to develop a medicine. They were trying to develop heart medicine, they noticed when they did the study, the medicine wasn't working for the heart. And they couldn't understand why the men wouldn't give the medicine back if it wasn't working for the heart. So finally they got the men to tell them why they was keeping the medicine. and they was keeping the medicine because it was making the penis work. It wasn't making the heart work, but it was making the penis work. And that's
right.
How Edward got discovered.
Okay. That's interesting. But what I was trying to say is that when it was first commercialized to the public, it was really to help those who reached a certain age and weren't able to get it up.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's like younger guys are getting it, you know. Guys are getting it, they don't need it.
It was really it was really good. Wait, can I say this? It was designed for the men who had problems. You didn't have to be old, like if you were diabetic, because you got young men who cannot get up either. So that's really what it was designed for. It really was designed for the heart.
We'll pick that one back up Friday if you want to on that.
We can.
Oh yeah, Delton, you'll be hosting Friday. Icy Hot. And so on Friday we will talk about women who love gigolos. Women who shop at the meat market. And women who, what do they do, Delta? Expound on it.
I want to know why women love to take care of deadbeat gigolos.
Okay, that should be interesting. Maybe somebody call in and explain to us. Yes, and I'll see if I can also book Matangi to come on and maybe share some of her hot, sexy tips going into fall, how to keep the spice in the pumpkin pie and the fire in the bedroom. Ooh, la, 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 la. But, look, let me read this quickly, and I want to share this clip on Malcolm X. Lamar Odom took cocaine and 10 doses of Viagra like medication, sheriff says. That's what the Los Angeles Times read. I tell you, I was totally, look, Delta, I had no idea. I did see his picture flash up on my phone or Twitter or something, I don't know. But you know what? I didn't even pay any attention to it because I already know, look, boy, I knew it's just a matter of time. You just sit back and say, okay, so he got with one of them. You know, I'm not saying anything.
No, I can't, but I can't say that. We can't say that because Lamar Odom, he come from a father that has a history. Lamar Odom come from a family where his father had a history of doing cocaine. And Lamar
the cocaine
Odom,
don't have anything to do with it. What difference does it make about the cocaine? I mean, what's the
no? It sure does.
What? I'm talking about the fact that these people like him, they keep running to these girls outside of that.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And they only come to their demise. Only for them to call.
Yes. It's a matter of time.
Them anymore.
But
I don't feel.
And they get it so
really
clever.
Sad, but,
they going through a divorce, and they put in a divorce that if he become incapacitated. Now look, in the divorce.
Incapacitated
before.
Then all of his wealth goes to Khloe Kardashian.
Before the
right.
divorce is final, she held everything, so she's still his wife. So you know they're not going to let no divorce go through now. Because really they said he's basically dead. Really they saying he's really basically dead. The machine is keeping him alive.
Well, you know what? Okay. That's enough on Lamar Odom.
Yes, he's taking enough of our energy.
Yeah. I'm you know what? He should have known that these people were going to set his little self up, and next thing you know, he'll be like my grandmother said, wake up dead. So,
Wow.
May you rest in peace, because they played you. You got played.
Yep, you got played.
Dude,
you got
played. And that's what these people need to really wake up and realize. Rest in peace, you know, may your soul rest in peace, you know, may you get better if that's in the cards for you. May you get better. And when you get better, I hope you do better. So, good night. Thank you. Peace. Namaste.
Namaste.
Wake up and be grateful in the morning. Thank whoever for all that you have. Peace.
And breathe.
And breathe.
The political philosophy of black nationalism only means that the black man should control the politics and the politicians in his own community. The time when white people can come in our community and get us to vote for them so that they can be our political leaders and tell us what to do and what not to do is long gone. By the same token, the time when that same white man, knowing that your eyes are too far open, can send another Negro into the community, get you and me to support him so he can use them to lead us astray. Those days are long gone. So the political philosophy of black nationalism only means that we will have to carry on a program, a political program of re-education to open our people's eyes, make us become more politically conscious, politically mature. And then we will, whenever we get ready to cast our ballot, that ballot will be cast for a man of the community who has the good of the community at heart. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we should own and operate and control the economy of our community. You would never find, you can't open up a black store in a white community, white man won't even patronize you. And he's not wrong. He got sense enough to look out for himself. And you don't have sense enough to look out for yourself. The white man is too intelligent to let someone else come and gain control of the economy of his community. But you will let anybody come in and control the economy of your community. Control the housing, control the education, control the jobs, control the businesses, under the pretext that you want to integrate. Nah, you're out of your mind. The economic philosophy of black nationalism only means that we have to become involved in a program of re-education to educate our people into the importance of knowing that when you spend your dollar out of the community in which you live, the community in which you spend your money becomes richer and richer, the community out of which you take your money becomes poorer and poorer. And because these Negroes who have been misled, misguided, are breaking their necks to take their money and spend it with the man is becoming richer and richer, and you're becoming poorer and poorer. And then what happens? The community in which you live becomes a slum. It becomes a ghetto. The conditions become run down. And then you have the audacity to complain about poor housing in a run-down community. Why, you run it down yourself when you take it out. And you and I are in a double track. Because not only do we lose by taking our money someplace else and spending it, when we try and spend it in our own community, we're trapped because we haven't had sense enough to set up stores and control the businesses of our community. The man who's controlling the stores in our community is a man who doesn't look like we do. He's a man who doesn't even live in the community. So you and I, even when we try and spend our money in the block where we live or the area where we live, we're spending it with a man who, when the sun goes down, takes that basket full of money in another part of the town. So we're trapped, double trapped, triple trapped. Anywhere we go, we find that we're trapped. And every kind of solution that someone comes up with is just another trap. But the political and economic philosophy of black nationalism, the economic philosophy of black nationalism shows our people the importance of setting up these little stores and developing them and expanding them into larger operations. Woolworth didn't start out big like they are today. They started out with a dime store and expanded and expanded and then expanded until today they're all over the country and all over the world and they're getting some of everybody's money. Now, this is what you and I in General Motors, the same way, didn't start out like it is. It started out just a little rat race type operation and it expanded and expanded until today it's where it is right now. And you and I have to make a start. And the best place to start is running the community where we live. So our people not only have to be re-educated to the importance of supporting black business, but the black man himself has to be made aware of the importance of going into business. And once you and I go into business, we own and operate at least the businesses in our community. What we will be doing is developing a situation wherein we will actually be able to create employment for the people in the community. And once you can create some employment in the community where you live, it will eliminate the necessity of you and me having to act ignorantly and disgracefully boycotting and picketing some crack or someplace else trying to beg him for it.